Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Old Lady Speaks podcast on Black and White and Red All Over. This is your host, Danny, coming to you for episode number 13, the episode in which we'll dedicate it solely to our best Brazilian fullback friend, Danilo, and a backup goalkeeper extraordinaire, Alex Manninger, who had maybe the best reactions you've ever seen. So congratulations to them. They hold that honor. And by the way, if you're wondering, Juve's run of number 13s lately, before Danilo, has included legends like Federico Peluso, Alex Manninger, the long-forgotten number three goalkeeper of the Claudio Ranieri era, Jess Van Straten. So there you go. I'm sure you guys were all hoping he got more playing time. And Fabrizio Micoli. So we're running strong with some number 13s there. So as usual, I am joined by the cast, Sam Lopresti. Hello, Sam.
Wait, you're saying that Manninger's reactions were better than Pinso's?
It's hard to tell because Manninger just had so much facial expressions, and Pinso is just all everything all the time. And that was the one good thing to come out of the Roma game, is that he actually got to play, and we got to hear him screaming at the top of his lungs outside of a goal celebration. So also got Chucks here. Hello, Chucks.
Pinso time is the best time.
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. Fabrizio Micoli, my God, that's a truly, truly a throwback.
That's a throwback to the Juve offside, isn't it, Chucks?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that brings back my memories. You know, it's funny. I think we mentioned on the number 9 one, I think it was Valery Bozhinov.
Yes.
I think I made the comment that I remembered seeing him on Eurosport 2 when Eurosport 2 would show those matches. Same story with Fabrizio Micoli, I believe. I think I remember him also from Eurosport 2, if my memory serves me right. But anyway, good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening. And we've got Sergio Romero, the Raul Jimenez to Juventus bandwagon driver. Hello, Sergio.
Hey, fellas. So good. I do wonder when is it going to start getting tricky to keep on the number gimmick thing we have going on?
When it hits the 30s.
Yeah, I'm thinking, like, because this one was, like, dicey. It was like, oh, crap. Like, actually, Danilo is the best 13 player lately. So, yeah,
so that's going to get dicey. Which obviously means the bar is very low.
Yeah, actually. Well, we're talking about Serie A champion Danilo now.
So, that's right. You know, that is true.
Let's acknowledge that.
Which is a great transition right into what we're going to talk about today. Not Juventus lifting the trophy, which I think we can all agree the last couple of games were crap. But Juventus has actually a game to prepare for now that the Serie A season is over. And that is obviously the Champions League tie against Lyon in Turin. The first leg was quick math in my head 5.5 months ago. So I guess I'll just throw out this question right off the bat. How confident are we feeling entering a tie where Juventus has to turn around a 1-0 deficit?
Not very. Not very. hate to say it, but not very. No, as we were talking about in a pre-show before we started recording, a good friend of mine, shout out to my man Fabio, by the way. He's a Milan fan. And after the game against Roma, Roma and Cagliari game, but especially the loss against Roma, he just sent me a barrage of messages. Oh, you guys should be ashamed. Like, you guys look at the terrible form you're in. Actually, I have my phone right by me, so I can read you some of the texts. he was just like, oh, you guys, you don't even care anymore. You want to finish the season in style. You need to get in form for Champions League, blah, 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 blah. But anyway, he let me have it, you know. And while I defended our performances in those two games, because I said, I mean, look, nobody cared anymore. Like, clearly, nobody cared anymore. Like, let's just be honest. Nobody cared. However, another important point was just the fact that, once again, as I mentioned last episode, referencing Sarri's comments of, the last 4 or 5 months have been very emotionally, more than anything emotionally, but also physically very, very taxing on the players and the human beings. You know, once again, they're human beings. So it has been just a very trying time. First, emotionally, just seeing, as Sari described it, you know, you're sitting at home and it's not very relaxing. You know, what were his exact, I think he said, people talked to me and said, oh, well, the players had 3 months break. Well, it's not really a break if you sit at home and see millions of people around, or well, hundreds of thousands of people around the world die. And then that's the emotional side, and then the physical side of playing a game every 3 days, I believe it was. I'd actually counted in July, because I just wrote my monthly recap. In July, there were 8 games in 25 days. So that is essentially every 3 days.
That's game. Ridiculous.
Yeah, that's, I mean, and, you know, it's, I mean, I think this podcast will be out by the time my monthly recap will be out, but I had referenced in my article a comment by FIFPro, the Global Footballers Union, represents footballers all around the world. They had released a report, I think it was called At the Limit, in which they basically chronicled the playing demands of, top level players. Like, what are the physical demands on players nowadays, on top level players? And I mean, they just said it's completely ridiculous. I mean, they play, you know, they attract players playing 60, 70, 80 games in a season. And I mean, a season is roughly 10 months. So, you know, you split that per month, that's on average, you know, 7-8 games a month. I mean, just absolutely inhumane demands on players. So yeah, just pointing out the emotional and the physical side of that. So because of those two things, I'm a little worried for next week, or, well, we're recording this on Monday. So sorry, the game is this Friday. Man, time flies. So yeah, I mean, a little worried indeed.
It has no meaning anymore, time.
It really doesn't. Especially when you're working from home, it's just very, I know, it's all very weird. Thankfully, my employer is not listening to this, so it's all right. But
That's what you think.
Who knows? Hopefully not. If not, well, no, actually, I have nothing to say. Yeah, I mean, concern also with injuries. We saw Rabiot coming off in the final game against Roma, presumably precautionary, but still problematic. The biggest worry, of course, is Paulo Dybala. I mean, is he going to be fit? I think the article you posted, Danny, was cautiously optimistic, the words were used. I mean, that is very, very big concern indeed, because the partnership between him and Ronaldo is, you know, finally starting to look quite good, actually, and quite, you know, flowing a little. And I mean, frankly, he has been our most informed player since the restart, I would argue. So if we don't have him, that's seriously, seriously problematic. Plus, I mean, we just ended the season with our worst defensive record since, I think, 6-7 years or so. I'm not very confident, frankly. Really not very confident. And Lyon just had their, just to end my long, long, long rant, Lyon just had a cup final, a League Cup final against Paris Saint-Germain just a few days ago. And, well, I mean, their team is looking pretty good. They held PSG to a 0-0 draw and then lost on penalties, 6-5 on penalties. And I mean, they had basically a full squad available. Just looking at it right now, my man Memphis Depay, he's back, he's fit. Played, let me see, 80 minutes. So, I mean, he's back and fit again. Moussa Dembele, Houssem Aouar, Max Okoné, Bruno Guimaraes. I mean, they're all, you know, they're all looking fit. They're all playing. So, yeah, I mean, I'm pretty concerned.
Yeah, I think it was about a year ago or a couple of years back, I don't remember. I got a question in the mailbag, you know, the black and white and red all over mailbag that we had going on in the summers when we didn't have anything to write about. So, and
remember
it was like,
those?
Remember how that was? And I think it was like a question of like, why can't Juve ever win the Champions League? And I remember making the argument like, this is so unpredictable, right? Like, it's a knockout tournament. You have, everything has to go right for you. You know, you have to be in the right form. You have to have like no significant injuries. Like a suspension can really derail something when you have like, you know, it's just a couple games and that's it. That's your season, right? It's not like a league competition when there's a bunch of games and, you know, usually talent wins out or whatever. And if you add that to probably one of the most unpredictable Juventus teams that we've had in the last decade, where you just don't really know which team's going to show up, if they're going to be like on their, you know, if they're actually going to be good, they're going to be decent, they're going to be terrible. We've had really the gamut of options during this restart. And add to that what Chucks was saying, and, you know, arguably one of your most important players in Paulo Dybala, we don't really know if he's going to play. We don't really know if he does play, in like in what form he's going to be. Is he going to be 100%? Probably not. I mean, there are just so many things up in the air that it's hard for me to really say, oh yeah, we should take care of this. Like, on paper, we should take care of this. Lyon, you know, has had just one game since the lockdown. Like, talent wise, they're not a bad team. Obviously, they're a good team, but talent wise, you should be able to beat them. But there's nothing really that Juventus has given us this season that would make me say, like, oh yeah, definitely, like, this is a done deal. Like, I wouldn't bet on them to beat Cagliari, which they didn't. So why would I, like, you know, think that they're going to beat Lyon? I mean, it's really up in the air. Like, I would not be surprised if they come out flat and, you know, Lyon gets an early goal and that's it, right? Like, I would not be surprised if that happens. And I actually wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, they all got some rest and they go out there and they play a really good game, a really cohesive game, and they move forward, right? Like, honestly, it's really going to be a coin toss for me, but, you know, hoping that we do go forward and actually make the mini tournament in Portugal.
I'm going to counterpoint this a little bit. I am cautiously optimistic for one of the things that you, Sergio, said just at the end there, is that Lyon has only played one competitive game in the last 6 months. And that's a really big deal. You know, a lot of people were talking about how they looked in their game against PSG. And I mean, when you compare them with PSG, who were only playing their second competitive game in that time frame, then they looked pretty good. When you compare that to a team that has been playing league football up until 3 days ago, that's a different thing. And I always cast my mind back to the time before UEFA fixed it so that Italy didn't have to go through the qualifiers in the Champions League, the third or fourth place team. And there were some teams there that lost to teams that they had no business losing to. You know, Roma went, I think, lost to a Porto team that was not as good as them. Lyon lost one of those. Napoli lost, I think, against Sevilla, and they were a much better team that year. And the big thing there was that Serie A, traditionally the last league of the big five to start, were playing and the Italian team in that tie had not played a competitive game going into that fixture, whereas their opponents had already been playing for two, sometimes even 3 weeks if they ended up getting matched up against a Premier League team and had that bad luck. And the difference there showed so much. And I think we're going to see something similar this time around. I just think that when you look at that gap in match fitness and match sharpness, especially when you have somebody like Ronaldo on the field, who, you know, he hasn't been, you know, in the most wondrous of form, but against a team that's going to be that out of sync as compared to Juve in terms of that match fitness, in terms of how many matches they've been going, that could be really deadly for them. Now, I'm not saying, you know, go and spend your rent money on a ticket in Atlantic City for this, but I think that gap is going to be really a lot more than a lot of people are thinking about. And the other thing I also think is that the one major change from this game as opposed to the first game that we played is Adrian Rabiot. I remember the first leg. The first leg was the game that I gave up on Rabiot. I was like, all right, I'm done. Like, I had been trying to be patient with him. I was giving him really good, you know, I was trying to give him as much leeway as I could because he hadn't played for so long in PSG. He was so bad in that game that was the game where I was like, all right, no, I'm done. Let him go. And then the renaissance has happened these last 3 weeks for him. And I think that having him in the midfield, because the biggest problem that we had against Lyon in the first leg was the midfield. You remember that lip-reading video of Ronaldo and Dybala talking to each other in Spanish, saying the midfield wasn't getting them anything. I think that might change this time. And so I think that there are more reasons to be slightly optimistic than you guys do. Obviously, to each his own opinion in that. But I think we've got a very good shot at getting the result that we need.
I'll tell you something. I agree 100% with you on that, you know, Lyon is, like you said, I mean, 6 months off, you know, anything resembling, like, playing form, just one game to their name. Like, that to me, if I want to, you know, feel optimist and be like, oh, no, they got this, that to me is the biggest argument. That to me is like, okay, Juve hasn't really looked great, but, I mean, there's no way Lyon is going to come in with, like, in better form. I mean, there's just no way. So, then again, I don't think it really speaks super highly of this current iteration of Juventus, where the main selling point of them actually, you know, going into the quarterfinals is that their opponent is probably going to be even worse than them. So, you know, I think if you have forced me to pick, definitely, I think they should progress through, but, you know, who knows? This Juventus hasn't made anything easy for them this season. Everything has been a struggle, so it would not shock me at all if this was just, you know, another kind of like another thing where they struggle again.
Sam mentioned Rabiot, and it got me curious as he was talking to look up Rabiot's rating and description from Sam's recap from the first leg against Lyon. And I will just say that Rabiot got one of the lowest grades I've ever seen Sam give in one of his recaps. And
what was that, a 3 did I give him for that game?
It was a 3. Miralem Pjanic also got a 3. Danilo got a 3.5. So, you know, salute to our, you know, numerical choice of the day. But as Sam was saying, you know, this was his chance to really stay claim to a consistent starter spot, but he fell on his face in his return to France. And I think as Hunter pointed out in his piece about Rabiot late last week, you know, this is finally the Rabiot that we were all kind of hoping to see once he shook off the rust. And so now that he's as Bendikur has shown the signs of really some fatigue setting in, I believe, Rabiot has really become their best midfielder right now, at least their most in form, I should say. But, you know, now that Rabiot seems like he's a lock for the starting lineup in these kinds of games, there's that choice of, do you put Bentancur at Regista, or do you put him on the right and then Rabiot on the left? And then maybe you don't have the same kind of defensive cover for Ronaldo on the left side as you would if Blaise Matuidi was there. So, yeah, I mean, it's really one of those things where Rabiot's emergence has made the midfield at least some of a choice, rather than how many months did we go, okay, these were the best three, and that's that.
Yeah, I do think that when it comes to, you know, do you put enough defensive cover in behind Ronaldo, when you come into a second leg down 1-0, it doesn't really that's a secondary concern, I think, when you come into a second leg needing to win by 2. I would also like to mention, and this is one thing, I know that I sounded very optimistic just now, if Juve were to get past Lyon, I have zero expectations for anything beyond that.
There goes the optimism right there.
I want to make that clear. I want to couch that.
I echo that 100%.
Zero expectation for anything beyond Lyon.
Yeah, like I said, I echo that 100%. I mean, it's a brutal, brutal path to the final. It's, yeah, against, frankly, the most informed teams of Europe. So, one thing's for sure. I mean, if we actually reach the final, then hell yeah, we're going to win it. But, you know.
You mean Atalanta is going to win it?
You want to tempt the wrath of the whatever from high atop the thing? Let's not.
But, I mean, if we reach the final, that's, yeah. No, but another thing about the game against Lyon is, you know, obviously remembering that we don't have an away goal. So, yeah, I mean, we're playing at home now. And, you concede one away goal, and well, I mean, you have to score three, so that's really very delicate position, very tricky position indeed. And given the struggles we've had in defense late this season, well, I mean, the season in general, we had a good spell, about a month or in a bit before COVID.
Yeah, remember those times?
Yeah,
those
were fun times. Yeah, we had a decent spell for a while, but yeah, it's a very tricky position to be kind of on the lookout, looking over your shoulder for that away goal, which in a way was the same situation last season against Atletico. The second leg when we came back, 2-0 behind, and it's like, well, we got to watch out for that away goal, which I mean means you either just fully go gung-ho attack, so you suffocate them so much that they can't even launch a single attack, or you just play really cautiously in attack so that you kind of sit back and you don't give them any space because you're like, well, just in case they might hit back. Two approaches, I suppose. I mean, very, very reductionist way of saying it, but two approaches, I guess, to take. And I think against Atletico last season, I think we did really go for the gung-ho approach of just fully attack them, fully pressure them, fully suffocate them so that they can't even just have an inch of breathing space to even launch an attack, period. And, of course, you have the home crowd then. Well, had the home crowd, sorry. You had the home crowd then, really on your back and giving you that momentum. Obviously, we don't have that now, but that's just some kind of extra thoughts on that one.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Speaking of the star of that Atletico Madrid game, how big is this for Ronaldo's legacy at Juventus? Because, I mean, we talk about him in the sense that, he's brought all this attention to Juventus. He's brought, a following that the club hasn't had in years, and attention and a spotlight. Even when they were making a Champions League final, there wasn't this kind of spotlight just because he wasn't here. But when it comes to him, he was obviously brought in, at least for on-field purposes, for one reason, and that's to make Juventus a legitimate Champions League contender. So what does this do for him and what he was brought in to do? Because, I mean, I've gone back and forth, been saying, as much as Dybala will help, if Ronaldo ain't closer to the Ronaldo we saw that was scoring goals and not the one who was just peppering shots into defenders' legs the last couple of weeks, it's kind of like, well, what good is that going to do?
As far as his legacy goes, his Juventus legacy, I think if they don't win a Champions League while he's a Juventus player, yeah, it's going to be like it's going to be a stain on his Juve legacy, as silly as that sounds, I think, because they did bring him to win the Champions League. That was it. That was the entire purpose of bringing him in. Whether or not that was a valid way of looking at it, whether or not they were actually right in thinking we are one Cristiano Ronaldo away from the Champions League, we can debate that. But that was the meaning behind the move, right? And, for as much as we talk about, Juventus failures, quote-unquote failures in Champions League play, Ronaldo has performed up to expectations in that tournament. Last year, the Atletico Madrid second leg, that was, one of those iconic moments, not just for Juventus, but probably, the entire Champions League, right? He just took that game on his own and kind of, powered the team through to the next round. I don't think we're going to see something like that from him this time. I mean, he hasn't really looked like that type of player this last few games. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm not. I would actually look for Dybala to be a bigger difference maker than Ronaldo in this one.
So you said something, you said one sentence there that I thought was interesting. You said, we can debate if Ronaldo's arrival at Juventus or Ronaldo being bought to win the Champions League, or the team being one Cristiano Ronaldo away from winning the Champions League, if that was the right move or not. And I think that is exactly the point, actually. Well, first of all, was that the right thought? Was that the right thought, A, and was that the right decision, B? Both of which I think is no. I think we can all agree on that. I think absolutely not that the team was one Cristiano Ronaldo away from winning the Champions League. Not last season, not the season before that. And that was just, completely nonsensical of the management to think that. If the management did indeed think that, then that, I think, was just completely erroneous. But, he's here. He's here now, so we gotta live with that, obviously. And I'm sure Hunter would love to jump in on that if he were here. But I'm watching you, Hunter. I kind of feel like invoking, like, from The Lion King, being like, Simba.
he'll just magically drop into the Zoom call.
You're like, Hunter. But awkward Lion King references aside, I think, one thing in fairness in Ronaldo's defense, last season, against Atletico, he bailed us out on that game. Clearly on that second leg, he clearly bailed us out on that one. And then that just strange, crazy, fascinating tie against Ajax, which, just was very, very... Yeah, interesting tie.
Who is that defender? Who is the star man?
Some bloke.
Some other guy from Portugal.
Some bloke with big thighs.
I think that this second leg would mean a lot more to Ronaldo's Juventus legacy if it had been played when it should have been played, as opposed to now. Because there is just so much... about this restart. That's another one for you to spell, Danny. It's 2 weeks in a row now.
But yeah, I'm guessing at this point.
I was just gonna say that.
Yeah, I feel like, because of the shutdown, so many bets are off that I don't think this game will mean as much in the context of his legacy with the team as it would have if we had been playing it in March and he either lifted us out past Lyon or failed to, or, did his damnedest in Lyon win anyway. That's the third. That would have been the third option. I just think that with the shutdown, you can't really say if we don't get past Lyon on Friday that it's an indictment against his time. I totally agree with what you were saying, Chucks, about how, whether or not he was brought here on a premise that was correct is another discussion. But when it comes to just directly his legacy with the team based on what he can do on the field in a total vacuum, I don't think this game is going to have that much import just because everything has gone so screwy the last couple of months.
Which, by the way, quickly going back to how, just unpredictable this whole thing is going to be, and how really the entire podcast has really no confidence in this team progressing beyond this, the round of 16. Wouldn't it be the perfectly Juve thing for it to happen that they just go on a run and somehow win the Champions League this year in the one like super wonky year with like the one leg knockouts and like all that?
Considering the fact that we've already got one Champions League final where no one could celebrate because everybody died in the stands, that would just totally be us.
Yes, that would not surprise me at all. And then everybody would just hang that over our heads, you finally won the Champions League, but it was the wonky year with the one leg knockout type of thing. That would, at this point, why not? Honestly, it might happen.
It'd be such a fitting end for the season that doesn't make sense, right?
Yeah, it definitely would. At this point, pretty much every take I've had about this team has been wrong. So I think the one thing I was right about was De Ligt and Rabiot actually being good. That's it. Every other take I had has been wrong. So, why not?
What do we even pay you for anyway, eh? Come on, get him out of here.
Just wait until Juventus signs a Mexican, then the takes are going to be all right on.
Get him out of here. No, and honestly, Sergio, from what you said, I think anyone that wins the Champions League at this point will get that. Like, oh, yeah, but they want it in a, you know, wonky, like, format. I was thinking about that the other day as well. I think that's definitely true. Granted, the haters will say that. I mean, you know, it is what it is.
I mean, if a team I don't like wins it, I will definitely make that argument. I am not above that.
So basically anybody outside Atalanta or Juventus, you're just going to be like, ah, whatever.
It's like, whatever. This is trash Champions League. Who wants to win that one?
On that note, shall we jump into some Twitter questions, gentlemen?
Yes, let's.
All right. So we'll keep with the Champions League theme here. And basically, we will go with our friend Hondi Vondi, who actually has a one-part question, not a two-part question this week. Will it ever be possible to have a black and white and red all over sanctioned meetup in the United States? Yes, in 2025.
At a socially appropriate distance.
At a
And by the way, he said that we pronounced his name wrong, so yeah, I don't know.
All right, Mr. Vondi, give us a correct pronunciation. We'll get it right next time you ask us a question.
I think he said it was Handy Vandy.
Handy Vandy?
I don't know.
I was trying to be like you, Chucks, and, you know, give out my bring out the accent a little bit. So
no, people butcher my name so much. my last name mostly, and I don't even know. He was moaning about us mispronouncing his name as well.
That's 2 weeks in a row. He's just gonna be like, happy he got mentioned.
I was like, get in line, son. Get in line. People start adding syllables to my name. That's when you know it's legit.
When you're Italian, that's a thing. I remember one time somebody referring to Shrek and figuring out that, oh, right, the movie. It's like...
Shrek. This sounds almost like Arabic or something.
From @Bachisabi, what happens in the first half of Juventus-Lyon? And I'm basically assuming that will be, with how much fire are we expecting Juventus to come out with?
Well, I'm going to invoke the words of one of my most hated people in the world, Mark Zuckerberg. Congressman, that's a great question. So I'm going to say...
A Zuckerberg reference before Tim Vickery. Wow.
Yeah, no, because I was watching that Senate hearing.
Does this mean all of our Facebook accounts are getting zucked like right after this?
Yep.
Probably, well, I mean, bloke is watching me anyway already. So, I mean, come on, what are you going to do? I mean, what are you going to do, you know, frankly? But no, I was watching that Congress hearing of Bezos, Zuckerberg, Cook, and Pichai, and I was like, oh, God, I despise this man. Congressman, that's a great question. Well, you know, Congressman, my team will get back to you on that. Oh, if he says that stuff one more time. Anyway, this is not This Week in Tech. This is a Juventus podcast. But first half against Lyon, I mean, again, I kind of mentioned that earlier. It really, I think it's one of two ways. I think it's either a fully gung-ho, just throwing the kitchen sink at it, and kind of like the approach against... Like I said, the approach against Atletico last season in the second leg, which was just suffocate them, you know, just go fully at them and suffocate them. And to kind of stifle that threat of, well, if we concede a goal, especially early, but if we concede a goal, then we have three goals to make up. So it's either that or cautious, well, let's not go too intense because if they score, then, you know, we're in trouble. I think given Sarri's general philosophy, I see it being the Atletico approach, which, yeah, I think that I see that more in fitting with him. And hey, I mean, if Allegri took that kind of approach, I mean, come on, and surely Sarri's going to do it too. So all hands on deck, 100 kilometers an hour.
I think that's, I mean, we kind of have that have a history of that going into a second leg the last couple of years when being down. They scored pretty early against Atletico. You know, Mandzukic 2 years ago in the Michael Oliver debacle scored a goal within 2 minutes of the game starting. In the last couple of years when they've had to come from a losing position in the first leg, they've been on the front foot from the get-go, and they've been really, really and they've been moving really well, and they've been hungry. I asked myself as I was thinking about that before you finished talking the question of, will we be seeing the same kind of a thing without a crowd there? But of course, the Madrid game was at the Bernabeu, so you don't have that, you know. I guess you could say that when it came to Mandzukic scoring early, it kind of shut the crowd up at that point, and that helped. But I think we, you know, if they click and don't go on one of those weird mental, you know, nature hikes that they sometimes go on, I can see them coming out really fast and threatening the goal pretty quickly. The question is going to be how early they do score, because if they manage to get the first goal early, then Lyon's going to start feeling the footsteps behind them. If the longer it takes, the more desperate they're going to get and the more comfortable Lyon's going to get. The question, I think the better question, frankly, no offense to Bacisabi, is what's going to happen in the second half in terms of just how good are Lyon's legs going to be as opposed to ours? And are they going to start getting tired and making mistakes in ways that we won't?
Yeah, I think the most important thing about the first half is just going to, you know, to gauge what team is Lyon going to be like. I mean, what form are they in? Like, are they going to, what type of team are you facing straight up? Because they have no frame of reference for what they're going to be seeing on Friday. So I'd be very interested to see that, right? Like, if the first 15 minutes, what happens there? Like, are they playing well? Are they playing sharp? Or are they just playing like sloppy type of game because they haven't played in 6 months? I think that's going to be really, really, really the key. And that's just going to dictate how the entire game goes, right? And, you know, especially if either Juventus, but especially if Lyon just kind of like finds a goal early, which is completely not out of the question, that's just going to change the entire tie. So, yeah, I mean, this game might be many things, but I think it's going to be interesting at the very least. You know, I think it's going to be entertaining at the very least.
Oh, and can I also a quick shout out? Thank you, Bacisabi, for the question you submitted on my website. I did get it, and I did answer it. So I just wanted to give him a little shout out there and say thank you. And keep him coming.
There you go, Chucks. We got contributors all over the place.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because Congressman, that was a great question.
That's right. From @Cogliano_E, do you see Arthur's behavior recently as a potential red flag around when it comes to his attitude when he doesn't get what he wants? And if you guys aren't aware, I believe Barcelona and Arthur are still trying to work out a early contract termination, I guess it would be, or something that would allow him to basically not face serious sanctions from the club, seeing as he hasn't returned back for Barcelona's Champions League preparations.
I think it's one of those things with Arthur where, you know, he got really put in a no-win situation because, you know, he obviously didn't want to leave Barcelona. He said it over and over and over again. At the end of the day, they convinced him to come to Juventus, and then he immediately gets, you know, benched in Barcelona. I mean, I kind of get where he's coming from. It's obviously not the best way to handle it. You're a professional, you know, if they don't want to play you, whatever, you know, just write it out. I get that. But also, and I just checked this, Arthur is 23 years old. Like, you know, I mean, what were you doing when you were 23 years old, right? Like, I mean, it's tough to really, sometimes we kind of judge these guys on a, you know, crazy curve, and we're like, oh, you have to be like a super professional and whatnot. Like, he's a young guy, he's clearly frustrated. He clearly was at his dream club and things didn't really work out for him the way they should have worked out, or what he wanted them to work out. So, you know, it's not great. Like, I get that. But at the same time, like, I'm not going to overreact and say, you know, he's just a bad dude or he's a bad teammate or selfish or what have you. You know, I mean, we have a guy like Adrien Rabiot who had, you know, similar situation where he just refused to play for PSG. And, you know, he's a Juve player now. He's one of the, you know, bright spots of the season. So I think I don't really think it's a problem right now. You know, I think we'll see how he adapts to Italy. But I'm kind of leaning towards just, you know, kind of cutting him some slack, I guess.
I don't know if Rabiot didn't play at PSG because he refused or because PSG decided, well, you're not going to sign, then screw you. You're sitting for the rest of the season. I think it was the latter.
It was a contract thing. I mean, like, but yeah, like, you know, like he didn't handle that either really like super well. So, you know, yeah, he's also like a really young guy. So
I don't blame him for thinking, why should I show up if I know I'm not going to be used, especially when you look at Spain's COVID stats and you see them starting to tick up ever so slightly, which is worrying. I know that Aurelio De Laurentiis has actually been agitating to get his game against Barcelona next week moved out of Barcelona because he's concerned about the numbers there.
He also just agitates in general.
He does. That playoff comment he made this week was precious.
Yes.
Oh, that was hysterical.
Yeah.
At the risk of sounding like one of the worst video game fandoms out there, get good. If you're sick of us winning the league, get good. Like Sergio, like you said, you know, he's a young guy. This has obviously been a very emotional situation for him. He knows he's not going to be used, and he feels hard done by the team to begin with. So I can see where he's coming from. Again, you know, you do wish that he handled it maybe a little bit better, but I don't think this in a vacuum counts as a history, because this really seems, you know, you know, I've heard a couple of Barcelona fans talk about him from a discipline standpoint, but you know, people said the same thing about Mario Mandzukic when he came. Mandzukic was supposed to be a head case when we got him from Atletico Madrid. He ended up being one of the most dedicated players on the team for 4 years. So, you know, a club, the right club, the right coach, the right people around you can change you as a player, especially if from a guy as young as Arthur. So I, you know, maybe it's like a quartermast red flag, but it's certainly not all the way up.
Mario's a prick, but he's our prick.
Yeah, right.
All right, last one here from our buddy David Desberg at the True ROAC with Antonio Conte railing against Inter. And if you haven't seen those quotes, oh boy, it seems probable that he will leave at some point soon. Allegri is the top name to replace him. Does an Allegri Marotta Inter concern you?
I mean, I don't know. Inter are so bad that the only way they can win is by poaching our former staff.
That's right.
And come on.
Come on, Inter.
It's like, oh, well, let's get Marotta. Let's get Conte. Well, let's get Allegri then. Like, God, it's pathetic. But in all seriousness, I mean, I read those reports. I did see them indeed. I think Conte came up with a statement in which he kind of calmed the waters a little again, saying that, quote, I'm committed to a 3-year project with Inter, and as I have always done in my life, I will work hard and fight with all my strength and everything in my power to make it a winning project. So he said that just yesterday after kind of as a quick rebuttal to those, well, controversial comments that he made.
That also accompanied a threat to sue the guy at La Repubblica who said that he'd been trying to sound out Juventus and whether or not they were going to fire Sarri. Oh, but
Conte's been busy.
Things are going well over there.
Yeah, I mean, Allegri. I don't know if Allegri at Inter would really, especially a Beppe Allegri combo there would concern me. Although, I mean, Marotta at Inter concerns me regardless of who the coach is, because he's one of the best executives in the world. I mean, Allegri, yeah, man, he definitely has his positives as a coach. He definitely has his negatives. He's, you know, he had a couple of almighty brain farts with us. You know, that Bayern tie in the round of 16 a few years ago comes to mind, where he started terrible. Middle stretching over the two legs was really great, and then the last 30 minutes he screwed it up again. I mean, this was my thing with him at the end of his time at Juventus. I wonder what his tactical identity really is, because I think that's one of the things that really his team suffer from by the end is because he's tactically adaptable and he's fluid, and everybody loved that about him, especially when they compare him to Sadi, who really never strays from plan A. But by the end of his time there, I mean, what could you really say that Juventus had an identity under him? And I wonder if the same thing is going to happen with him at Inter, regardless of the number of the players, especially when if Barcelona pay enough money, Lautaro Martinez is going there one way or the other, and Inter can't stop it. And that'll be a big blow to them. So really, it would depend on the players. It depends on how Allegri would come across there. It certainly wouldn't. Allegri himself wouldn't disturb me much more than any other coach going to Inter if Conte were to leave, but Marotta there disturbs me regardless.
We'll wrap it up there. As always, you can listen to us on Apple iTunes and Apple Podcasts. Feel free to subscribe and like, and possibly even write us a review there. We're also available on Spotify and Google Podcasts. You can find us on our usual social media channels, and seeing as it's Champions League week, we'll be having plenty of stuff coming your way before Friday's big game, and hopefully it's not the last game that we're talking about this season. So,
Before you wrap up, Danny, yes, sorry, Chuck. I hate to I know it's a sin to interrupt you, but just want to give a quick shout out. Follow me on YouTube. I have a YouTube channel now, so follow me on YouTube where I talk about my upcoming book.
In your Juventus streak.
Yes, I do. So just Google my name, you'll find it. Yes. The YouTube channel is my name. So my government name. So Edward Patrick Akinyemi. So or just my website, edwardp.me.
When will you be having your fellow Big Dutch Quadzilla boy showing up on your YouTube videos?
My man. Well, he is from my hometown, so
he got that connection going there, bud. So
he knows where to find me. I know where he's at.
All right, for YouTube star Chucks, for Sergio, and for Sam, this is Danny saying thank you for listening. Stay safe out there, and we'll talk to you next time.